But now leaders are really the ones that are looked at to say, if you're leading a fulfilled life, then you're going to show up with that in the workplace. And we're all going to get to experience what that is. And we're also going to have permission as employees to live a fulfilled life. We don't have to feel like our life is compartmentalized and I'm this person at my job and I'm this person at home.
In a bit of a departure from the typical topics around office space, this has to do with more of the human side, focused on health and wellness. And today, my guest is Erin Koop, the founder of Authentically EC. She facilitates the next era of human development within corporate clients of all industries, from global law firms to professional services, tech, and finance. Much of her work is with managers, leaders, and executives focused on areas of holistic well-being, mindset growth, emotional regulation, and all things related to being and bringing our best self in work and life. Prior to going down this journey and starting her own company, she was a senior executive at CBRE, commercial real estate. And then prior to that, she was in finance at Goldman Sachs. Erin, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dougal. Good to be here.
So, Erin, how has personal growth and self-development played a role in your professional life?
So, it's a really deep question because it's basically the reason that I now do what I do and the reason I started my business about 3 years ago. Going back to when I was in commercial real estate at CBRE, I started there in 2016, having been in the industry for quite some time on the architecture side for a while. I was at a point where I was, you know, doing what you do. I was doing tenant rep and I was sort of my own team. I was on my own little island, if you will, and really started to seek out in my life ways to grow that were otherwise not really available to me in the corporate world. And part of it was maybe a personal journey, but it was really also a leadership journey. I really felt like there was something more for me to learn and I needed to find what that was and really sort of scratch that itch. So I went deep on that journey of self-empowerment and personal growth. And, you know, we're not separate people at work and at home. We might think that we can fragment ourselves or compartmentalize ourselves, but really we're the same person. And the work that I was doing on me when it came to self-development and improvement was really overspilling into my business in real estate. And it had a profound effect on relationship building and doing business in general.
Yeah. And I distinctly remember talking to you about this and you were saying it immediately affected in a positive way in terms of, you know, recognizing revenue and like, not like you were searching for that as part of it, but it's obviously an important part of being in this business. And it kind of came to you as a result of you essentially finding your true voice, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I remember when I was starting to share, as I told you before, share articles on LinkedIn that were just thought leadership pieces around some of these empowerment topics, you know, things like bringing a mindful approach to business and things like not looking at networking as a dirty word and really just bringing more of a human element into it. And as I was doing that, yes, my network was growing along with that because of some of the efforts that I was putting in to build relationships and to make connections for people. And then, of course, to be on the receiving end of that. But then what I really noticed is that the types of relationships that I was attracting were so aligned with where I was headed. It was like almost as if prior to doing some of the work on me, and really being more authentic in my own skin and in my own voice, the relationships I attracted, some were great and some were a little bit less fruitful, right? It's almost like I got so clear on exactly what it is I'm attracting and why. And then business became more fun from that point on.
Well, isn't that kind of what everyone strives for, is have clarity and purpose in whatever you do, right? I mean, that's like the ultimate. So now you take those learnings from, you know, the professional environment and, you know, your personal growth and you bring it to companies and leadership. So talk to me about, you know, the kind of work you're doing with leaders in particular and how you help them, you know, find their authentic voice and have it apply to their specific business.
Yeah. So the main thing that I do, or what I would say, I guess, is the most needed in the world at this time, because it seems to be the most popular and the most asked for, is going in and working with teams of leaders. So That, depending on the scale of the company and the size of the organization, can be the executive team. It could be the direct reports and the executive team. It could be management level and those that they report to. But typically, I'm working on a group basis. And there's a lot that goes along with that, because the journey is really about the journey inward for each person. We go in first in order to emerge outward in better ways or in improved ways. And so we're looking at, where are we now as individuals and as leaders and as a team, as an organization, and then where are we going? And start to close that gap by working on the inner self and then emerging outward with more, call it positive influence, not rainbows and unicorns, but more positive influence and leading by example in how we're showing up for those that we lead and how we're showing up for ourselves first and foremost. And then for our families, right? Because again, we're not separate people. So a lot of that work I'm doing is about the inner game and the outer game and finding this intertwine or this middle moment of presence where we can really be in tune with what's going on in our own mindset and then aware of what's going on around us. That's sort of what being mindful is, or bringing a mindful approach is. That's the main thing that I'm doing right now. I also have a private program, I think I mentioned to you, called Authentically You, that's been really popular. Totally different energy in that program, as you can imagine. It's a cohort that people are individually signing up for. So these are executives that have been in a leadership role for at least 10 years or more, and then they're signing up for this, and it's just a fast track into being your more authentic self.
Okay. And so Is that all on the leadership executive side? And then as far as the employees, will you work simultaneously with the executives and at the same time work with employees, so you can kind of bridge the gap, so to speak, so they have a commonality of understanding?
Yeah. So typically when I'm working with leadership, it starts there. And there's a few reasons for that. But I think the main reason is that if you think about something like culture, it is not set at an organizational level. I mean, the brand, the mission, the values, those might be, and they sound beautiful and look great on a website, but the cultures are really set by each leader, and they're mini cultures. And then together, those make up what the culture or the feeling of the company is. What does it really feel like to work there? So what I'm doing is really working with leadership first and helping them transform or shift and their mindset and their ways of being, their ways of leading. And then I'll work with employees, but that's typically more on like a workshop basis, where I might teach 2, 3, 4 tools in a 1-hour workshop on improving your well-being or in being more mindful, improving your emotional quotient, that kind of stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So a lot's really evolved over the years in terms of the expectations of leaders, right? I mean, now we're asking, in some cases requiring, leaders to be more empathetic, more mindful, take better care of themselves so they can take better care of their employees. And I know this is, you know, your business, but have we gotten too far with expecting too much from the leaders in the companies? I mean, in some cases, you know, and for what I do and what you had done, you know, on the real estate side, is you're trying to attract all these people to come into your office and make it safe, healthy, productive, all those sort of things. But what should the expectations be of an organization and leadership versus what should be on an employee and that individual's personal? You said, you know, you can't separate the personal from the professional, but there seems to be some need for that, you know, demarcation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the thing that we have to remember is that we're all human beings. And a big aspect of what makes us human is our ability to connect on an emotional level with other human beings. And that is what, when you feel connection, when you feel chemistry, when you feel invested in someone and cared for, and that you care about another person, that is really because there's an emotional connection there that's underlying whatever that is that you're feeling. And so for a long time, the workplace was all about just show up, produce. You know, you're either a part of input or output in the company, and that's what you're there for. So we were taught to be fragmented versions of who we are. But we also know that that led to, these terms are not new terms, but the quiet quitting with the 1 foot out the door. It used to just be called 1 foot out the door, right? Like, people were already planning an exit because they were not happy where they were. And historically, and I was guilty of this in my career for sure, But historically, we would say, you know, the grass is greener over there. So I'm going to quit this job, or I'm going to quit this leader, or whatever it is that was bothering me in a certain organization or in a role. And I'm going to go do this one because I'll be happier. 6 months later, you're just as unhappy because the grass is usually just as brown as it was in the other place. That's because it's about the inner game. It's about who you are and how you're showing up. For me, it was always about my approach to the workplace or to the people. I could easily blame the company, or I could have blamed, you know, the work I was doing or the team I was working with. But in reality, it was how was I managing the stress and the anxiety and the pressure, right? It wasn't about all the other things. So we used to look at it from that angle. And we used to say, you know, my fulfillment lies elsewhere. But now leaders are really the ones that are looked at to say, if you're leading a fulfilled life, then you're going to show up with that in the workplace. And we're all going to get to experience what that is. And we're also going to have permission as employees to live a fulfilled life. We don't have to feel like our life is compartmentalized and I'm this person at my job and I'm this person at home. That leads to burnout and it leads to resentment and all kinds of other negative emotions that we really don't want in the workplace. And we don't really want to have to deal with the wrath or the erratic behaviors of someone that displays those emotions. But at the end of the day, it's all behavior is all driven by where are you emotionally. So this is really just taking what it means to be more human into account and teaching people the stuff that we've never been taught. You know, we weren't taught this in college. We weren't taught this in grade school. These aren't skills that we have. We have to learn them.
Yeah, it's kind of frightening that we have to learn to be human.
Right.
But that's the dehumanization of society, so to speak. It's kind of scary.
Exactly.
Do you have any examples that you could share where you've been part of someone's breakthrough or you've seen someone, you know, change as a result of talking with you and what that's manifested itself into an organization?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have so many examples, but one that's coming to mind to share with you right now, a CEO of a Silicon Valley firm did some work with me a couple of years back. He had shared a story, I would say about halfway through our engagement and, you know, so a few months in. And he'd learned several tools because with all of this, it's about accountability, right? Like someone or yourself have to hold you accountable to practice. Because it's not stuff that happens overnight. You know, we don't shift our mindsets overnight. But for him in particular, he used to have a lot of erratic displays of behavior. And it was because he was irritable or he was moody or he was frustrated. He wasn't treating himself very well. So he was, you know, skipping workouts. He wasn't eating well. A lot of the stuff that he typically would do to take care of himself, he was in a rut, right? I mean, a lot of people were in a rut in COVID, you know, so rightfully so. But one of his direct reports owed him something by a certain date, of which there was an email that laid out what he needed a couple of weeks prior. So there was plenty of time to get this work done. And on the day it's due, he gets an email from this guy. And it says, basically, long and short is, I can't get this to you because I don't have these five things. And so until I get those, I can't get you what you need. Therefore, his presentation to the board was delayed. And he's not happy about that. Now, he has a right to be upset, right? But the way that he responded was by picking up the phone and going off on the guy. And of course, it happens to be a Friday. And now, you know, that guy is then going to go into his weekend stressed out, probably full of anxiety. And what would have happened, and the way that my client described this is what would have happened is that typically he would have just let that go. He would have never gone back to the guy on Monday and said anything about it. It would have just been a part of their relationship from then on. There would have been tension. There would have been, you know, some sort of mental processes going on in his head about this guy is useless and all these other things. And the integrity of their relationship, the trust would have been broken, if not, you know, dampened. So instead, he went back to him on Monday and he apologized for the way that he behaved. And he said, look, I'm still upset that you didn't get this to me because here's the repercussions. Going forward, when you have an email in your inbox, please read it in advance so that you can do the work. But I want you to know I'm going to do better so that I don't throw my emotions and project the frustration I felt back onto you. So that was huge because what that did is mitigated the stress and tension between the two of them. And then this guy that reports to him doesn't have to feel anxiety every time an email hits his inbox from his boss. I mean, that's just a little minor thing. Yet that same guy also took up meditation, and his children now, who are in their teenage years, also meditate before swim meets, and their performance has, it's superb, put it that way. So that's not a direct cause of my work, but it's a direct cause of the work that the guy put in on himself.
No, that's nice. I think there's a case for just pausing. And I think men, quite frankly, are probably not as good as addressing that as women. I don't know if you find gender differences, but you know, women tend to be more empathetic. Women might be better at apologizing than men, perhaps. I don't know, but there are those gender differences, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, one of the main ones I see is that, and this is also kind of looking historically, but women in the workplace kind of get deemed as so emotional, and men get deemed as erratic or flies off the handle. That's kind of a term that gets used for men a lot, right? In reality, in both cases, people that project outward like that just means that they're not regulated internally. They don't know what to do with their emotions. They don't know what they feel, and they don't know how to navigate that. So the way I look at it is, we can always have compassion for people in that sense, because they're just not self-aware. They're not choosing it. It's just unconscious behavior. But they could also do better if they had some tools.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, a lot of work. And these are people that are working long hours already. So the question is, you know, if you're already successful and, you know, you might ruffle some feathers, is it worth it? But it's, you know, it's longevity, it's relationships, it's connection, all those things.
Right. And I also think that it's stuff that will, you know, help carry people into, for example, their retirement years, right? I mean, being self-aware is not something that once you have it, you lose it. I mean, once you really develop this mindful approach that I'm telling you about, there are so many benefits to being more present in your life. Physiologically, there are many benefits. So I'm not even just talking about that stuff, but I'm talking about your approach, how you navigate adversity, how you navigate a bad day or a bad meeting or bad news. I mean, all of that can shift, not to where it's all going to be perfect. I mean, that's, I always say we're not striving for perfection, but there's also no reason we can't strive for excellence in our own lives.
Right. So talk to me about what's changed now. Different leadership must be going forward to lead millennials, Gen Z, and future generations to come. There are a lot of differences in a workforce. You might have, you know, 3 to 4 generations. How is that difference?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things, I know you said earlier, have we gone too far, you know, as far as what we expect out of leaders? And the thing is, it's not that we've gone too far, but we've shifted. So we have changed as a collective. And I totally believe that COVID was a catalyst for that change, because it needed to be something really big to kind of force all of us to look inward a little bit, or to be a little bit more reflective. And with that, we also have the boomer generation rolling out of the workforce. And of course, along with that, we've had Gen Z rolling into the workforce. And so these younger generations, call it millennials and Gen Z, and I'm on the cusp of millennial and Gen X, so I can see kind of both sides, right? But the younger generations care about how they feel. They know how they feel. They're very in tune with it. And I raise my hand. I am one of those people who used to have no clue how I felt. I didn't know what I felt. I didn't know when I felt it. All I knew is most of the time, it wasn't feeling very good in my own head. So I would try to get rid of it, right? And you know my husband, Craig, but unfortunately, Craig early on in our relationship was the one that tended to get the brunt of that. Sometimes it was people in the workplace around me, but most of the time it was at home, because that was the safest place. And so we all do that. We're all guilty of that, right? But millennials and Gen Z are very in tune, and they want to lead and be led in a different way. And so that's a lot of these shifts that we're talking about: being more self-aware, being more self-empowered, having a more mindful approach, navigating your emotions, having the tools to improve your well-being and not feeling bad about it. You know, this isn't about working less. This isn't about not being productive. We still need to realize that livelihood is very important. And livelihood is what we earn from, for example, we get income for a job in exchange for the energy we put into it, right? That equals our livelihood. So it's still a huge part of our lives, but it doesn't have to be our lives. This is a huge, huge paradigm shift from boomers who believed that work was life. And they lived that way, right? So it's not that we've gone too far. It's just that we've gone a different route. We're going down a different path now as far as how we're showing up and how we're living our lives.
Okay. So you were a guest speaker for a Harvard Executive Management program on intrinsic motivation. What's that about?
Yeah. So kind of a lot of the stuff that I'm already talking to you about. Intrinsic motivation, and the professor that invited me, Dr. Bobbi Wegner, she runs a company called Groups where they do group talk. So it's about group psychology, really being more vulnerable, more transparent, more open. And the intrinsic motivation course was about what is driving human behavior, what is driving people to want to do more in their lives or to achieve more or to be more. And I really came at that from the angle of authenticity, of people wanting to have more clarity, wanting to have a more fulfilling human experience. And so therefore, if they show up as their whole self and they really bring that to whatever engagements they're a part of and, you know, relationships they're a part of, then they're going to feel more connected. They're going to feel more motivated and driven. They're going to feel more encouraged, perhaps more recognized. All of that together will intrinsically help them get more of what they want or be more of what they want. So that's really the angle I came at it from. And there were, I want to say there were three different guest lecturers as a part of this 2-hour course that, and we all kind of had a little bit of a different approach, but really a lovely course to be a part of, because I mean, when else do you get to talk at Harvard about something that you're passionate about?
For sure. Yeah. Right? That's neat. That's neat. Yeah. So what gets you most excited and what are you most optimistic about? Because frankly, it can be hard sometimes to be, you know, optimistic in a world where there's all kinds of things to be pessimistic about, right? Whether it's the human condition, whether it's war, whether it's the economy. I mean, it is nonstop, right? So to some degree, you look at someone who's happy-go-lucky and you wonder, you know, are they really facing reality? Because reality is tough for a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm. So what keeps you motivated and upbeat?
Yeah. Well, for one, you know, the blessing and the curse is that my life has not been easy. And, you know, I grew up very poor in poverty with a very sick father and a mother who had to work multiple jobs and was never around. So I really had to raise myself and grow up very fast. So I've seen adversity. I grew up in it for 17 years until I could leave that household. So the things that are going on in our world today, as dire as they are and as awful and polarizing as they've been, also, I don't let them control me. I don't let them direct my mindset, right? And I'm very, very, very aware of what I consume mentally. So things like news, I just don't allow in. I choose my news and I choose it carefully. But in my household, you'll never see a news station just running in the background. It just doesn't happen. That's just important to note because that's a practice. That's a mindful practice that I've been living with for over 6 years now. But what gets me excited and helps me stay optimistic is, for one, my own growth. So I'm still constantly working on me. I think we're always all a work in progress. So I do practice what I preach. And I do it daily. And it's not something that I have to make separate time for outside of meditation, but it's really a way of being. You know, I always say we're in our minds all the time. We just can make better use of our time there, right? So that the personal growth side of things gets me excited. And then helping people. I mean, I started this because I know the benefits of it and I know what transformation is really like. And once you're not a different person. But once you realize that you can shift your mindset and just be a better version of who you are, it's almost like, why would we not want that, right? Teaching people the things that they've never learned, but that can be so profound in their life is a huge driver for me to just wake up every day. So that's that. And I'm also a mom, right? But like, I'm not the mom that's like, my number one purpose on this planet is to rear children. Like, it's a big part of my life and I love my kids dearly, but that is not all of me.
I think that's a good way to end the conversation on a positive note. So I appreciate this is a little bit, you know, out of line with more of the traditional office-based podcast recording. So I think it'll be well received and it applies to really just everything. So I appreciate your time and I'll have information about your services in the show notes.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It was so much fun.
gotta show me.